Gritmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where we're recording the Diz Dads podcast, episode number 31. Tonight, the Diz Dads are hopping over to the West Coast to discuss the mothership, Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure. With me tonight are Dave Compton.
Good day, y'all.
James Goodman.
Hey, how's it going?
And our special guest, David Platt.
Hey, how are you?
Now, guys, before we get started, I need to remind people that the Diz Dads podcast is sponsored by Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Several of the podcast panelists are members of the Fairytale Journeys team, and we'd love to help you put together your next magical Disney vacation to Disneyland or Disney World. Check us out at fairytalejourneys.com or the Fairytale Journeys by Diz Dads page at dizdads.com. We'll sweat the details so you don't have to. Now, the first thing I'd like to do here is kind of introduce our special guest. David Platt is here because he is, to me, an example of a freshly minted Diz Dad. David took his first Disney trip with his daughter just this past spring, just about a month ago, and was absorbed into the Diz Dad phenomenon pretty quickly, experiencing Disneyland through the eyes of his four-year-old daughter. So, David, why don't you give us a quick overview of your vacation? You know, how long were you there in Disneyland, and where'd you stay?
Okay, we were there, I believe we flew out on a Tuesday, flew back on a Saturday, so we were there 3 full days at the park, which we thought would be plenty when we were making the trip. We stayed at the DoubleTree Hotel, which is one of the Good Neighbor hotels. We weren't able to stay on property this time, just purely because of cost issues. And frankly, we were pretty glad we stayed at the DoubleTree. It's a great hotel. It was just far enough away from the park where we felt like we could get away from the crowds if we needed to. We went to Disneyland itself 2 full days. And then spent the third day at California Adventure. Although anybody that was there that weekend knows that it torrentially rained on that Friday, so that day was kind of a bust.
Yeah,
it was pretty much just huddled under shelters for most of the day. But neither my wife or I or our daughter had ever been to Disneyland before, so it was a completely fresh experience for all of us, and it was just a pretty amazing trip overall.
So, what was it? Can you identify a particular moment where something happened and you were sold?
Oh, absolutely. The very first morning in the park, we, based on your advice and other people we had talked to, we made a real effort to be there right when the park opened, right at rope drop. That was kind of a special experience. It wasn't super crowded. But we also had tickets for Toontown Morning Madness that morning. So as soon as the rope dropped, we just booked it as fast as we could back to Toontown. And we were literally, I think, the first people through the gate to Toontown. And the very first thing my four-year-old daughter saw within 5 minutes of being at Disneyland was Mickey Mouse just hanging out on the street corner with nobody around. I got this great about 10-second video of her just running up and giving Mickey a hug with it just looks deserted. It looks like the park is closed. And it's, you know, like Aaron, I think Aaron said when I told him about this before, that's a pretty special video. Not too many people have anything like that. And I agree. And from that moment on, I mean, I just knew it was going to be a fantastic trip.
Excellent. That's a great way to start. Mm-hmm. And now, I guess that moment's probably hard to top. Do you have any other kind of big highlight favorite moments that you would want to talk about?
Oh, gosh. There were so many. We did a couple of the character dining experiences, which were pretty special. We did Goofy's Kitchen on our first night there, and my daughter just got to meet so many of her favorite characters, just ran right up to them, gave them hugs, danced with them, and my daughter's not the most outgoing little girl in the world, so it was pretty amazing to see her just run up to these people like they were old friends and interact with them. And I can't think of just a specific experience, but just the overall experience with the customer service of all the cast members. Just, you know, you hear about it all the time, but it really is exceptional. They will just go above and beyond to make your trip happy. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, every trip has its difficulties as well. So, you know, in a 3-day trip to the parks, you'd had the torrential rainstorm there on your last park day.
Right.
But, you know, maybe even other than the rainstorm, what would you call the greatest challenge of your Disneyland experience?
The greatest challenge was, we discovered on the first day, my daughter has always had some sensory processing issues pretty much her whole life. She's conquered a lot of them, but Disneyland brought a lot of them back just because it's so stimulating. You know, it's so overwhelming. And people had recommended to us before we went that we look into a guest assistance pass, but we didn't really think we would need it, so we didn't. But at the end of that first day, after she had problems waiting in some of the queues that are really loud and dark, for instance, the Roger Rabbit ride in Toontown, we decided to stop by, City Hall and talk to them about it. And they said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll get you a guest assistance pass. And, so we could use alternate entries. And from that moment on, our trip changed. I mean, it was like night and day. The trip was so much more enjoyable. We didn't have to worry about our daughter freaking out about anything. We didn't use the pass all the time. We didn't want to take advantage of it, but it was really nice to have it when we needed it.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, I want to start kind of bringing in James and Dave here, and we have to talk about what is always a favorite topic among Diz Dads, and that's food. We all like to eat, and Disneyland offers some great dining opportunities. So I thought I'd kind of open the floor up and ask people about what their favorite Disneyland food items might be, or favorite dining experiences. And that could be anything from, a favorite snack from a cart or a favorite sit-down meal. James, what about you? Is there a favorite in your mind when you're looking for food at Disneyland?
Let's see. We're big fans of the Mickey ice cream bar. So okay. We go right for dessert first. So you can find those all over. And I know my son likes churros. So we can combine the two together. It's a perfect meal.
Ooh. And, covering all the food groups.
I know. And
ice cream and grease.
It's awesome. we actually, just before you get in the parks, we're into like the beignets. And I know they have a lot of the like the New Orleans themed restaurants. So you can pretty much find those everywhere, and they're great when they come hot right out of that fryer.
Okay. How about you, Dave? A favorite Disneyland dining experience or food tip?
Yeah, I'm going to keep with the same focus. Last time I was there was 3 years ago, and I had the Monte Cristo sandwich at the Cafe Orleans there. And I got to say, since then, I have been looking for a good Monte Cristo, and I can't find one. It's just that one was the tip of the iceberg. It was just phenomenal. I don't know what it was. It was just the berries on it was just perfect, and the powdered sugar and the way the cheese was just melted on it. It was phenomenal. I haven't found it since, and it's worth a trip back just to go there and get that, I think.
All right, so now that Dave has all of us salivating, David, how about you? What was a favorite dining or food experience in Disneyland?
My exposure to the food was pretty limited. We left the park pretty early each day, so we didn't eat dinner there, and we just ate on the run as we were there. We got breakfast every morning at the Tomorrowland Terrace, which has an awesome breakfast burrito. That was the way we started pretty much every day. Probably my best food experience was, again, like I mentioned earlier, at Goofy's Kitchen. They had some pretty awesome desserts, really great cupcakes, things like that. They had a peanut butter and jelly pizza, which my child really liked. just really imaginative food.
Sure. Sounds great. And we probably should mention at this point that there are some differences between dining at Disneyland or at Walt Disney World. Most of our listeners are primarily Walt Disney World guests, and they're used to the sort of Walt Disney World way of doing things, which is the 180-day advanced dining reservation window and the sort of, need to plan dining far in advance. And then also the Walt Disney World Dining Plan, which is a credit-based system where, you know, you purchase a number of days of the plan and you get credits that are used for a meal on that day. And it doesn't really matter what the menu prices are. The dining plan sort of takes care of your meal cost just on a credit-by-credit basis for the meal on the whole, as opposed to based on the specific price of the entrees. And that's very different from the way that, you know, the sort of the planning and the paying for food works at Disneyland. I don't know, Dave or James, have either of you looked into the Disneyland dining plan at all?
No, I never used that. Just didn't feel the need for it there, really.
Uh-huh. James, had you looked into it at all?
Yeah, when we were there, we stayed on property and off property both times. So it's easy to go around and kind of use other options for dining all the time. So we didn't really invest in it, but we didn't do too much investigation.
Okay. Well, you know, just to give people the lay of it and how it works differently. You know, at Disneyland, the extent of the dining plan really is to buy or pay in advance for what amounts to scrip, which is, you know, money that can be spent only in Disneyland restaurants. And it's direct dollar for dollar. You pay $50, you get $50 worth of scrip that you can spend in the restaurants. It's sort of like a specialized gift card ultimately. And it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, we have debates back and forth about whether there's value in the Disney dining plan at Walt Disney World. I think I can comfortably say definitively that the only value I could come up with for the Disneyland dining plan was, you know, if you were traveling with like teenage kids, you know, you could give them scrip for food and know that they weren't blowing it on souvenirs. But that was the only value I could see in it at all. And what about the, you know, table service dining situation? James or Dave, did you make advanced dining reservations for table service meals, or have you experienced table service meals at Disneyland?
I did. Oh, sorry, James.
No, that's okay.
I did when we were there, and you know, it was amazing how many you could just walk up to, and they go, "Okay, we got a we can put you down for a reservation right now." And so, next thing you know, you're sitting down within 5 minutes. Uh-huh. And we even did, you know, I was always kind of shell-shocked, you know, character dining from Walt Disney World, that you got to have a reservation, you got to get that well in advance. We actually did a character dining at the Plaza Inn, and I was blown away how many people were just walking up and being able to just walk right in and do the experience, and just how much available room was still in the restaurant. And that kind of took me back, and I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'll know that for next time.
Sure. And James, you were starting to say?
Oh yeah. Like, the Blue Bayou is one of those restaurants that everyone says, oh, you have to go there. Right. Cause yeah. It's right by the Pirates of the Caribbean. So we called and I was like, oh, I want to make a reservation. And, you know, they were like, reservation. It was kind of interesting cause they didn't really think I needed one. But I'm just at Disney World. You don't want to like go to one of the hotspot restaurants without a, you know, dining reservation. And we just walked right in, and it's like kind of the same thing as Dave was saying. You kind of walked in, and they wasn't very busy, and you just kind of, you know, it was easy.
Sure.
And for the character dining, you really get, you know, phenomenal character experience because they sit down with you and they play. I mean, we even had the Mad Hatter and Alice playing hide and seek with my daughter in the Plaza Inn. I mean, you know, where else are you going to see that? And that went on for a good 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I actually had the same experience. We did the breakfast with Minnie at the Plaza Inn on our first morning there. And, yeah, I think it was, Max and one of the Pooh characters, I think Eeyore, were playing hide and seek with my daughter for at least a good 5 minutes. It was just, it's pretty amazing the level of interaction you get at the character dining.
And David, how far in advance do you remember how far in advance you made that reservation?
I believe it was probably close to 60 days. I think we we booked our trip about 2 months in advance.
Right.
And I pretty much booked the character dining right then. But I will say, I'll echo what was said just a few minutes ago, that it seemed like pretty much any character dining experience, you could just walk up and have a pretty good chance of getting in.
Yeah.
The only one I remember that was not like that was the day we spent at California Adventure. We tried to get into Ariel's Grotto for lunch with the princesses.
Yeah.
And because of the torrential rain that day, they obviously couldn't use their outdoor seating. So they were completely full, overbooked. We couldn't get in there. But yeah, that was the only issue we had like that there.
Yeah. And actually for Ariel's Grotto, you know, I not being able to use the outdoor seating because of the rain probably played a big part of it. But I think they must have had some capacity issues overall, because just within the last month or so, Ariel's Grotto has added a dinner time princess experience as well. You know, they used to do just breakfast and lunch, and then for dinner it was a World of Color dining option. And now they've gotten rid of the World of Color dining option there and made it another princess dinner. So they must have had some capacity pressure for it. And that actually, I think, kind of leads us into the next kind of important difference between Walt Disney World Resort and Disneyland Resort. And I think it plays into the whole, you know, dining issue. And that is that, you know, Disneyland Resort is just kind of in the middle of, you know, an urban area. In Walt Disney World, you're intentionally, the resort was built intentionally in the middle of nowhere. You're fairly well isolated from Orlando itself. But in Disneyland, you're right in the middle of a city, and there is a lot of, you know, dining options just a 2-minute walk from the gates of the park. You know, there's an IHOP next door. So I think that does help keep the in-park dining crowds down a little bit, but it does make really the whole experience a little bit different as well. And you know, why don't you guys kind of talk a little bit about the whole issue of, you know, the difference in the way that Disneyland is laid out as compared to Disney World. James, why don't you get us started on that, kind of the issue of how the park or the resort is laid out as compared to Walt Disney World?
Well, I think when you think of Disney World, it's hard for you to put your mind around the massive size that's there. And I've been going to Disneyland when I was a little kid. My parents took me there, so I remember just the Disneyland park itself. And like once you go through the park, it was like, okay, then we're done. It was kind of small, and you could put your head around it, And I think just the location alone, it's just so easy to walk around, you know, there's so much to do in that area. But I found it to be, you know, there's so much packed into Disneyland. I don't think you can cover it in a day, but you know, can actually, you know, walk around it a lot closer. And it's like you turn left and here's a ride, you turn to the right, here's another one, and it's all around you. So the layout is really cool, I think.
And David, maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, the experience of staying at a Good Neighbor hotel, right? Not staying on Disneyland property, and sort of how it felt in terms of distance and how connected you felt to, you know, Disneyland and the resort experience as well.
Yeah, sure. I don't really have a whole lot of basis for comparison because
sure.
I've never stayed at a Disney hotel, but like I mentioned earlier, I kind of enjoyed at the end of the night feeling a separation from Disney. Like we were off in our own space. There were plenty of places around. We could, you know, take a walk to get something to eat if we wanted to. We were away kind of from the crowds of the park. The hotel itself, like I mentioned, was great. It's right on the art line. So we hopped on the art every morning about 7:15 and got at the park. To the park in about 10 minutes. I know I've read a lot of complaints online about the art system, but we never had a problem with it at all. It was great.
Okay. And how about you, Dave? Any thoughts on sort of the layout of Disneyland and Good Neighbor Hotel situation as compared to Walt Disney World?
Yeah, for me, whenever I'm doing my planning for Disneyland, it's almost so much because you're trying to take into account all the Good Neighbor hotels. Okay, and what are my options? What's my transportation option from each one, and what works? And what we ended up doing, and our Darda was 4 at the time, and so she was still taking naps, and so we elected to go to the Disneyland Hotel, and plus I always wanted to stay there. And that was just down through downtown Disney, and it's, you know, and you can walk right out of it, and within a few blocks there's a monorail station, so you can always take that into the park as well. And that was great, and a lot of convenience there. And you know, here's a little story, if you don't mind. On our last night, our last night there, you know, you want to get as much as you can in the shops and everything. And so we had a lot of bags, and we get back to our hotel, and I'm sitting there, and we start pulling everything out. I'm missing this, we're missing this, and we're missing this. What's going on here? And so I go downstairs, guest services, try to get a call into the park to the shop to find out if I can get a hold of anybody, but of course that's nearly impossible. So thank goodness we were close. So here I am, you know, about 9 o'clock at night, sprinting through downtown Disney all the way back to Main Street, and I go in, and the coolest thing was, as soon as the guy saw me, he goes, "There you are. We've been waiting for you." You know, and I was like, "Oh, thanks." You know, he's just, no worries. We were trying to get it to you somehow. So that was a cool experience. And thank goodness we were close. And that was, you know, one of many experiences that we had there that were just phenomenal.
So, you know, clearly one of the big differences between Disneyland and Walt Disney World resorts is sort of the size and scale. And we've talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, size and scale issues, and how Walt Disney World is much more spread out. Disneyland is more compact, and also it's sort of, I would almost say it's like in concentric circles at Disneyland. You know, you've got some sort of really intense, you know, really dense space in the park area itself. And then as you kind of step away a little bit, you get that sense, like David was talking about, where you could actually kind of step outside of the Disneyland crowd bubble, and, you know, still feel a part of that experience, of the experience, but, you know, have some separation from the more intense crowd and all of that. And James started, I think, to talk a little bit about how the different scale of Disneyland made touring the parks different than touring Walt Disney World, that, you know, you didn't have the wasted space, I guess is the way that somebody talking favorably about Disneyland would put it. Disney World fanboys might put it a different way, but I think from a Disneyland perspective, the idea is that, you know, there's not so much wasted space. I don't know, Dave, what would your take be there?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Everything is really in close proximity. It's evident playing the Disneyland Parks Connect game. You know, you're walking around and everything's very close. Fantasyland is right there. You turn the corner, next thing you know, you're in Adventureland. And it is. I never thought of it that way, but everything is kind of, it's smushed down, but it's still a great interactive. There's great sight lines. You turn one corner and, hey, there's the Matterhorn out of nowhere, you know, or there's Space Mountain down at the end of that row. It's all thought out well, though.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the real triumphs of Imagineering is what amounts to some really brilliant urban design, laying out the streets and pathways of Disneyland to help maintain the illusions of, you know, grand size and scale when it's really not all that big.
Yeah, if you look at old pictures of Disneyland before there were trees or anything, you know, they thought all this out in advance, and that's what's incredible to just think of what it is today.
Sure. So another big difference between Disneyland and Walt Disney World is and Dave, you're the one who just recently was mentioning it, is the monorail. You know, at Walt Disney World, we think of the monorail as this major transportation option that connects, you know, a whole series of deluxe resorts and two of the four theme parks, and it covers a pretty, you know, long track. Talk to us a little bit about the Disneyland monorail and how it compares.
Well, James kind of hit on it too, and for me, the biggest thing I noticed is it wasn't air conditioned. you don't need to; the windows are open, and you know, it's kind of a different type of vehicle, but it can pretty much take you into the park, and from the Disneyland, you can then exit the park if need be, or you can just take it on a loop as well, and that's what we noticed a lot of people doing, just taking it on the full loop from Tomorrowland and back.
Okay. And James, you have anything else to mention about monorail and comparing the two?
I was going to say the same thing, kind of. It's like an attraction in its own. You know, that's like a ride. And then it's like one of the, I don't know what mark number they are now. But it's pretty advanced. It's pretty cool looking compared to the ones in Orlando.
Right, that's right. I think that the Disneyland trains are now on the Mark V trains, if I'm remembering right. I could be off, but that seems to be the number.
Nice. Yeah,
it's like
right.
A little rocket ship.
And I don't know, David, did you guys take the monorail loop while you were touring?
We did, yeah. We rode it just because we felt it was just one of those Disneyland things you kind of needed to do, even if you didn't need to get anywhere. It was, as someone else just said, it's another attraction. It didn't seem to be much of a transportation option unless you were going, say, from like the Disneyland Hotel over to Tomorrowland. But yeah, it is what it is. It's another ride.
Yeah. So in some ways, you know, the Disneyland monorail is almost more akin to, you know, the Walt Disney World Railroad than the monorail on Walt Disney
World.
Yes,
that's exactly right. What I compare it to.
Whereas the Disneyland train, I think, is a good mode of transportation around the park.
And that's a good point too to emphasize, is that, you know, there are at Disneyland Resort, there are only two parks. There's Disneyland and California Adventure, but each of those two parks are fairly large, and the Disneyland park in particular is very large as compared to one of the Walt Disney World parks.
Yeah, and it's real convenient. You can be over by Splash Mountain and you say, hey, I want to get over to Tomorrowland, but I don't want to walk through because they're having a parade right now or something. So you can just hop on that, have a nice, you know, easy ride around the world, and next thing you know, you're in Tomorrowland. Or you can stop off early and go visit, you know, It's a Small World. And, you know, it's a good mode of transportation, we found.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And then, in addition, you've got some significant differences in the character interactions. You know, I think we got some of that from, you know, David talking about Mickey Mouse being there, literally waiting on the streets to greet guests as they came in on a Toontown Morning Madness. I don't think we get the same kind of thing at Disney World. I mean, the closest I can think of to that is having the Lady Tremaine and the Wicked Stepsisters occasionally will be, you know, walking around in Fantasyland early in the morning. But I can't think of many other walk-around characters at Walt Disney World anymore.
Well, let me add to the story about meeting Mickey like that just a bit.
Sure.
I didn't really finish it before that. Literally 1 minute after I took that video, Mickey was mobbed. I mean, there was a line. There was a line 30 kids long waiting to take his picture. So we just got really, really lucky. It was exactly the right time. The characters were, I mean, pretty much mobbed any time we saw them anywhere else in the park. So it wasn't like you could just walk up to any character immediately and get a picture taken, except in that one instance for me.
Sure, sure. I think the difference, though, is, and having not seen it in Disney World, the characters tend to have more of, you know, sort of permanent or semi-permanent greeting areas.
Gotcha.
And so compared to that, you know, having Mickey kind of walk out onto the street to greet people is just a little different. You know, at Walt Disney World, the most common way people are going to meet Mickey is, you know, in the new exposition hall.
I forgot. I just know Mickey's there.
Yeah, I was trying to think.
Okay.
We get a fast pass and we go see him.
Well, okay, so that's exactly what I'm getting at, though. In Walt Disney World, he's inside in the building that used to be called Exposition Hall, whatever it's called now. And you know, you actually draw fast passes to, you know, get a reserve a time to go and meet Mickey, as opposed to being more in the natural park environment. I mean, each has its benefits, I think, but I don't know, Dave or James, maybe one of you two can talk a little bit about, you know, comparing bringing your kids to meet a character at Disneyland versus Disney World.
Well, back in Mickey's Toontown, you have really good options to meet Minnie, Chip and Dale, just about all the main characters. And then what's cool is Mickey's has this really neat house, and you go through it, and there's kind of a maze that you go through, and he's kind of at the end. And the time we went through it, we were the only ones, and we just spent a good 10 minutes just kind of interacting, getting tons of pictures with him, and just talking with the photo pass guy, and he was adding, you know, getting us more pictures and everything. And that was a great experience. And he had a really cool getup, his band leader getup. And I had never seen him in that before. Mm-hmm. And it was really neat to see him in that. And just walking around, you'll just say, hey, there's Captain Hook. You know, he's just walking around, you know. And now, hey, there's one of Briar Rabbit or something. You know, it was just some really unique characters too.
Okay. How about you? Anything to add, James?
I would agree. I think the whole Toontown area is just amazing. And that's been there a little while, I believe. But like when you see some of the attractions too in Disneyland that are like the who's the rabbit?
Roger Rabbit.
Yes, him. that's you won't find that in Orlando, so you know, my son might not be used to that, and he's like, "Oh, who's the rabbit?" You know, we talk about Roger Rabbit, he didn't see that movie yet. Right. And I think there's something else. There's there's someone else like in the Fantasyland. There's another. The Toad.
Oh, Mr. Toad. Sure.
Right. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not familiar with that character either. I don't know that you can meet them, but it's just like also just the attractions named after the characters. There's some different ones. You know, sure. There.
Yeah, and they have a really nice area for the princesses. It looks like it was an old theater, and it's been, you know, kind of redone, and it's really nice and done up well, and it's kind of a nice waiting area for it. It's in the shade, so that's key.
Yeah.
And then the fairy area to meet them is really nice, and it almost takes you back, and you feel like you're shrinking the whole time as you go back, and next thing you know, you're meeting the fairies, and that's right. That was fun.
Yeah, that Pixie Hollow area with the fairies is really well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does feel like you're shrinking down to their size. And
yeah, more Imagineers playing with your head with forced perspective.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to sit outside and watch it at night, and it like comes alive.
Very cool. You know, actually, that's a really nice segue to talking a little bit about the difference between Walt Disney World and Disneyland in terms of the evening entertainment and the shows. There are some really significant differences. I mean, on the surface, it seems, you know, fairly similar, right? I mean, they each have a Fantasmic, they both do fireworks, but each of the different resorts has some unique opportunities, and each of their shows and evening entertainment things, you know, are different and really are catered to fit the resort in which they exist. You know, even on a really basic level, you know, Magic Memories and You Show exists in both parks, but at Walt Disney World, it's on the castle, and in Disneyland, you know, Sleeping Beauty's castle just doesn't really lend itself to a projection show, so they do it on the clock tower of Small World, which doesn't exist at all in Walt Disney World.
Right.
But there are some other differences too. And you know, Dave and James, maybe you could lead us a little bit talking about some of the differences in the entertainment and shows at Disneyland.
Well, if you've seen Fantasmic and Hollywood Studios and you think you've seen Fantasmic, you don't need to wait around and see it in Disneyland, you're missing out, because it is totally a different experience. They incorporate it. They use the river there, and they incorporate the showboat and the riverboat, and they also incorporate the Columbia sailing ship, make it look like a pirate ship. And it's really something to see, and it's really a neat show. You got to experience that.
Okay, and James, anything you want to add about it?
I would totally agree with Dave. Fantasmic is awesome. Isn't there some sea serpent or something?
Yes, that's right. The sea serpent. How can you forget that?
It's pretty intense. I thought it was great. And the music is amazing. It feels like you're in the middle of it almost, because it's so close. So it's good.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, that's a key difference. When you see the show at Disneyland, you know, you're essentially gathered around in the street to watch the show, right, as opposed to Hollywood Studios, where you're, you know, funneled into a theater, and on the one hand you get the sight lines of a theater, but, you know, I think that the show in Disneyland becomes a bit of a more intimate experience, because you're just kind of all crowded together watching.
Yeah, and there's not really a bad spot. You know, if you're towards the edge of the river, maybe, but, you know, it's a pretty good spot throughout.
Okay, and so what are some of the other shows or entertainment that's unique to Disneyland?
Well, of course, across on the other side in California Adventure, they have World of Color, and that's completely unique. And I didn't get to really experience that, but James, have you experienced that?
Unfortunately, it was still under construction when I was
there.
So
yeah, same.
I've only watched the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So, and David, I think it rained on the one day that World of Color might have been available for you guys.
Yeah, we actually didn't get to do any evening activities at all, just because we had a four-year-old.
Right.
She was sacked out by 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock every night. So we've already made plans for our next trip. We're gonna have somebody take care of her in the evening, so my wife and I can go back and do some of the evening shows, at least get to see Fantasmic, because I'm really disappointed we didn't get to see that.
Right.
So, yeah, that'll be something to look forward to.
Well, World of Color is sort of, you know, I've heard it described as the next generation of Fantasmic. You know, Fantasmic introduced the water screens and projection. World of Color sort of takes that all to the next level. It's somehow a blend of, you know, some of the effects that the Imagineers learned to use in Fantasmic and the things that the fountain designers did with the Bellagio fountains in Las Vegas, you know, and then all taken up another notch. It's a sight and sound and color and lasers, and everything I hear is that the YouTube videos don't do it justice. Supposed to be a fantastic show. If you want to see it, World of Color dining packages are probably worthwhile, because, you know, you can see the show from just about anywhere, but your best sight lines and an opportunity to sit, you know, and be able to watch are going to come for folks who pay the money for the dining packages, or who stay at the
Grand California.
The Grand Californian, and use the Grand Californian entrance to the park, which spits you out really close to the World of Color Fastpass machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we have to make a choice between the two, then if we only have an opportunity to make one evening show, I think we might make it World of Color then, judging by what you just said.
Yeah, it's really supposed to be a stunning show. And it's one of the things that I'm, you know, keeps making me think, you know, maybe we need to make that next trip a Disneyland trip. I don't know.
Yeah, you could do it.
Well, see, that's a whole nother discussion for another time, because, you know, we've got the Diz Dads convention in January, which I highly encourage people to go to, January 10th through 14th in Walt Disney World. Come join us. We'll have a blast. But see, we started this discussion of, okay, if we're going to be in Walt Disney World at the beginning of January, gee, that might not be a bad year to take the splurge and get annual passes, because we could go back in like October or December and be almost a whole year apart for the budget wise. But on the other hand, we'd save the money by having the annual passes. And that doesn't work if we make one of those trips a Disneyland trip. Before I move on, because I do want to talk in a second about the ticket issues that are different between Disney World and Disneyland. But before we get there, there are some other shows that are unique to Disneyland. We've got Fantasmic, and it's a very different performance in Disneyland than it is in Disney World. The World of Color show, which is completely unique. There's also an Aladdin show that's very well received in Disneyland and has been adapted for use on the Disney Fantasy cruise ship. All of the reviews I've read say, you know, if you got to pick one or the other, the Disneyland show is a better show. Any other unique shows to Disneyland that people should know about?
Well, every now and then you can see some great, just there at, in the Golden Horseshoe.
Right, right.
You got some good shows you can see there.
Right. Yeah. That some of the in-park entertainment that's really nice, you know, Billy Hill and the Hillbillies.
Right.
Which is something that I think a lot of people wish they would bring back to Walt Disney World. Walt Disney World has lost a lot of those kinds of performers that are still around in Disneyland.
And they just stopped having the dancing nightly, or I think it was just on weekends. They moved that, I believe, out to
Downtown Disney.
Yeah, but that used to be within the park. And I remember that because I had an aunt and uncle, and they had annual passes, and they would just go there for that.
Right, so, for the swing dancing.
Right.
Now, I don't know that it's clear yet that the swing dancing is gone for good from inside the park. Doing some work on the, you know, facades and things of the area where the dancing was happening.
I believe they've shut the venue. Was it Carnation? I don't remember the name of the place.
Well,
that's shut down now.
Right. But I don't think it's shut down for good.
Oh, okay.
I think that the whole point is that they did some rearranging, and they've been reopening pieces of it a little bit at a time. There's a new bakery, for example, and, you know, some of the outdoor seating isn't there anymore. So there's rearrangement. I don't know that it's for certain yet that stage where they were doing the dancing is gone for good. I think that there's still some talk that it may reopen because they, as I understand it, they still want to have the stage there and they want to be able to use it for other things. So when all the renovation work is done, they may move the dancers back in. But I don't know. That tends to be more of a local attraction, although I'm sure they would welcome tourist visitors as well. So we've talked about shows, we've talked about characters, we've talked about the scale and size. Let's talk nuts and bolts a little bit and talk about prices. Ticket prices in Disneyland are actually slightly lower than Walt Disney World. They're comparable. And as a result of that, there's actually a little bonus sometimes for Walt Disney World guests who have non-expiring tickets. If you pay the premium, get a non-expiring ticket, and you have a couple of days left at the end of a 10-day ticket, for example, you can exchange a Walt Disney World ticket for a Disneyland ticket. You can't do it the other way around because of the price difference. But just a tip, if you're a Walt Disney World regular and, you know, you normally take a 7 or 8 day trip, might not be a bad idea if you were considering doing a Disneyland trip as well. You know, pay for a few extra days, make it a full 10-day ticket, and you know, hang on to a couple of those days on a non-expiring 10-day ticket. There's your admissions at Disneyland. And because of the, you know, ticket prices getting cheaper per day the longer the ticket is, you might actually save yourself a pretty decent chunk of money. Other than that, Disneyland, you know, your basic tickets are 1, 2, 3 day tickets, and park hopper or non-park hopper. Almost all Disneyland tickets are park hopper tickets. You guys want to talk a little bit about why?
Sure.
Okay.
The obvious reason is that the parks are literally about 30 seconds apart. It takes about 30 seconds to walk from the entrance to Disney, from Disneyland to California Adventure. So you can very easily, you know, get a fast pass in one park, run to the other park, get a fast pass there, you know, just plan your day that way.
Okay. And that's actually a really good tip, because just like at Walt Disney World, the fast pass machines are not linked between the two parks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually have fast passes out from California Adventure and Disneyland in the same fast pass window. And the parks are close enough that you can actually use both of them. Would any of you actually consider buying non-park hopper tickets?
It's not a bad idea. You know, I'd say two full days of the Disneyland park, and then maybe a day and a half as it stands right now of California Adventure. But with Cars Land coming on, I could see a full 2 days there as well.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess one last thing to mention about Disneyland is it seems to be have a much greater shiny new effect than Disney World does.
Sure.
And it seems to go on a little longer. I mean, just as an example, you know, Walt Disney World and Disneyland just last summer opened identical Star Tours redesigns, right? New Star Tours. And the wait times pretty much across the board for the same exact ride, which should have the same exact capacity in Disneyland, are about 10 minutes greater than the standby wait times in Walt Disney World. Hmm. And generally speaking, most people attribute it to exactly that, the ooh, shiny new factor. Partially because you've got a lot more Disneyland folks who are local, and a lot of season pass holders who you know, are return visitors, they're in the parks frequently, and so they gravitate towards the things that are new, because the things that aren't new, you know, they've done 100 times. So
yeah, I can see that.
So I would expect that impact to be pretty heavy in Cars Land for a while, because they're getting a whole new land for the first time in quite some time.
Sure.
Well, anybody else have anything they want to add about, you know, differences between Disneyland and Disney World before we move to our sign-off?
Well, I had a unique experience, and it was a rare ride. Not
okay.
too many people get to ride on it, and
tell us
not
about
too many
it, Dave.
People want to get to ride on it. Well, it's this little thing called a earthquake.
Oh.
And we were, it was our first night there. We were in the Disneyland Hotel and about, oh, I don't know, 6-7 stories up. And it felt like the ball from Indiana Jones was rolling down the hall. And you could actually feel the ripple, which was the wildest thing. And it's got to be, to me, one of the wildest experiences I've ever been on. But there's a few people who've experienced that, and that was one of the things that kicked off the whole trip. It was fun.
Well, and you know, the amazing thing about it is that the park is all built, you know, with earthquake preparedness in mind.
Right.
And you know, I mean, I wasn't there, but I'm going to guess that the resort didn't skip a beat.
No, we thought it was fireworks, and the fireworks were actually going on at that same time, because we tuned in and were watching it on TV. Uh-huh. And I just assumed, oh, that's a part of the attraction. That's phenomenal. You know? I can really feel that boom right here. You know?
That's right. Disney can summon earthquakes.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to, before we go, because obviously Disneyland is a huge topic. We barely mentioned California Adventure on this podcast. We're going to have to return and talk about it some more. And so to maybe, you know, lead us towards in that direction, before we go, why don't you each give me your favorite Disneyland attraction and why it's your favorite? Dave Compton, you're up first.
Indiana Jones ride. Just the queue leading up, it feels like you're going into the jungle and you're getting immersed in just the story. And it's incredible. And the way they kind of suck you in. And then, to me, the ride was it was a great ride. I mean, it really got my heart pumping. It got me going. And then, you know, you come off and you're like, okay, I got to calm down here. You know, that was intense because it was a fun ride. And then, you know, from what I understand, it's different. You know, they have about four different endings to it. You might see Indy at the end, you might not. So
okay.
That was fun.
And David Platt, how about you?
Well, I'll have to preface this by saying there were a lot of rides that I didn't get to go on while I was there, which I'm looking forward to next time. But of the ones I did ride, I'd also say Indiana Jones, although I feel cheated now because I did the single rider, so I didn't get to go through that fantastic queue. So next time I'm going to wait in the regular line.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, definitely Indiana Jones. It's far and away the best ride I've ever been on at any amusement park.
Yep.
How about you, James?
I'm going with Space Mountain. Space Mountain Disneyland is totally different than Disney World. From the configuration of the ride vehicle and the music and all the other cool improvements they made, it's a totally different ride.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for all of the things that you've brought up. I think that we've kind of just gotten our toe wet in discussing Disneyland. We've got a lot more to cover. You've heard what we think. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our website, dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter. Or participate in the discussions in our new forums at boards.dizdads.com. You can even now call us and leave us a message at 816-348-3939. Who knows? If enough of you call, maybe we'll even start doing listener question shows. In any case, until then, it's been Aaron Rittmaster with Dave Compton, James Goodman, and our special guest, David Platt. Thanks for listening.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.
This has been a Wizard of Oz production.